We're talking about how to expand high-speed internet service here in Wisconsin. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're going to get the perspective of a service provider in the North Woods. Governor Evers announced this month that the state will dedicate $100 million of federal pandemic relief aid to award grants for expanding broadband in our state. And the Public Service Commission says it will open the application process for the broadband expansion grants Tuesday. Do you live in a rural area? How is your internet? Can you upgrade your speed? Can you afford to? 800-642-1234 to join in. Chad Mix is marketing director for Norvado. It is a cooperative telephone, internet, TV signal provider that has about 14,000 customers in northern Wisconsin. It's based in Cable. Chad, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to join you this morning.
Well, let's start out with what has been the impact on your business, on your company, since the pandemic started.
You know, I think for most companies, the pandemic has been troublesome. For internet providers, it's kind of been a bit of a boom. I think we've been very busy, and I think understandably so, with so many people working from home and children schooling from home. The demand has been much higher for new customers to sign up for internet services, as well as existing customers to increase their speeds. Right. So if generally they're using the internet for surfing, but now they have multiple people working from home or schooling from home, the demand for capacity is much higher. So for us, we've been really, really busy, and all during a time where, we've had to make a lot of adjustments to make sure that we remained available to serve our customers, right? So we've implemented a lot of new procedures to, geographically diversify our staff and keep technicians in particular territories so that not everyone gets sick at the same time and we can continue to stay operational. So it's been very busy, and it's also been a lot of change, but good change to make sure that our customers stay up and running.
Okay, so as you get this huge spike in customers and customers demanding higher speeds, can your network keep up with that demand? Can your network manage this influx in business in the North Woods?
It can, for the most part. I'll kind of separate different markets for you, because we purchased a telephone company called Price County Telephone in 2019. And we've since, starting in 2020, have been working to replace the copper network that was existing there with fiber network. And not every customer has been converted from copper to fiber. So depending on the home, the speeds might not be as great on a copper-provided facility versus a fiber. In our Norvado West, we call it, so the Cable area, all of our facilities are fiber, so very easily can increase speeds. And I would just add that even on copper, we can generally increase speeds. Some folks that are really far away, because copper's distance-sensitive, may have a little more trouble increasing speeds if they're still on the copper network. But generally speaking, yes, most people can increase speeds. And what I would tell you is that our internet traffic on our core network during the pandemic doubled. And we're still not on our internet, on our core network. So we built the network with a lot of capacity and fairly robust, so that we weren't planning for a pandemic, but when something like this happens or traffic spikes, that we can handle it. And so, I think we've been pretty proud of our network guys that built the network to not skip a beat, even though we doubled our traffic during this time.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Chad Mix, who works for an internet service provider in the North Woods. We're discussing the challenges of rural broadband connectivity from a provider perspective. You can join in. Do you live in a rural area? How has your internet connection been in these times? Have you upgraded your speed? Could you afford to? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Chad, I want to touch on affordability here. The FCC runs the Emergency Broadband Benefit, giving a monthly benefit for people. What have you seen from that stipend?
It's been a pretty low volume and a pretty low demand, believe it or not. I checked earlier this week on the numbers, and we only had 18 people so far, at least at that point. I think it was Tuesday. We've only had 18 people so far apply, for that stipend, and certainly it's open to anybody that qualifies, but I feel like that's a fairly low volume.
And to qualify, you've had to have a substantial loss of income due to a pandemic-related layoff or furlough. Another way to qualify is if you are participating in an assistance program or a household member has an income that is at or below 135% of the federal poverty guidelines. Why do you think that there hasn't been, that many people who have taken advantage of this $50 a month credit?
This is my own opinion, but my feeling is that it's twofold. One, I think that the awareness level may be somewhat low. I'm sure you've talked about it and others have talked about it, but I don't know how many people know about it. I mean, we have it published on our website and so do other telecom providers. But I think there may be a little bit of an awareness issue. And then second, there's no guarantee in how long it lasts. Right. So when the money runs out, it runs out, and it's going to run out faster the more people that are on it. And it, it might last 1 month and it might last 6 months. Nobody really knows. And so I don't know if that is a deterrent for people, kind of saying, well, do I really want to go through all this paperwork in order to, have a 1 month, have my internet on for 1 month and then have it off again unless I pay. I have a sense that may be contributing to the lower volume that we're experiencing. Now, maybe other telephone companies are experiencing a higher application rate. I'm not sure. My sense is that it's probably similar across all. And in that case, then the money will last longer.
So considering you're connecting people in northern Wisconsin, a very difficult terrain to manage, people spread out, lots of trees, which counties or areas would you consider are more difficult to reach with high-speed internet?
I don't know if any one county of ours is more difficult than the others. Certainly, distance from where we have network connectivity is always a factor, and it's not necessarily a factor because of the difficulty to implement. It's more of a difficulty due to cost, because building fiber, we've made a strategic decision to serve our customers on fiber all the way to their house, so that they will always be able to get the highest speed technology available. At least for now. But the cost to deliver, is really the biggest deterrent. Not so much the difficulty to implement. That said, we are in a small rural market. So with a long winter season, so we do have some difficulty in the amount of time that we have to build homes. And we start as soon as the frost is out of the ground and go until the frost is back in the ground and we can't any longer. But there are only so many crews that we can, put out to work, and there is only so much timeline. So if there is anything that slows us down, it's that we have a short build season. And that's true throughout Wisconsin, but we tend to up north have a little bit stronger winters and the frost lasts a little bit longer. Fortunately, this year, the frost was out of the ground early, and we started our construction season early. So hopefully that equates to building to more houses, and we are planning to do that.
Well, let's take a call. Rebecca is joining us from Ridgeway. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello.
What is your internet situation?
Well, right now I use a hotspot, and I've been living in rural areas for about 16 years, and my best story, and this is what made me a proponent of investing in rural broadband, kind of like we invested in rural electric 100 years ago. But I lived, my farm was in Deerfield, 11 miles east of Madison, and I could not get internet there. I was in a complete dead zone. And I tried to get Frontier high-speed DSL, and their box, their connection box was in my front yard, and it just didn't work. Dial-up would have been faster. And I tried twice with Frontier over the course of about 3 or 4 years, and it just didn't work, and I ended up using my hotspot. I don't need cable. I could have gotten Spectrum, but everybody complained about it. And Frontier was good. They had really good customer service, but they couldn't tell me why it wasn't working. It just wasn't working. So fast forward, now I'm moving to a new farm in Mineral Point, and I have high-speed internet there. And that's a very small community. So it's just so spotty all over the state. And I just think it's time that we make an investment in rural broadband so everybody has basically what is today's electricity.
Rebecca, thank you. Chad, why is it so spotty? Why can't there be equity in broadband?
You know, I don't know if I have all the answers, but I think that part of it is because it's dependent on the particular area's phone company, right? In our area, we've made the decision that we're going to build fiber and make the investment to deliver high-speed internet to our customers, our cooperative members. Whereas, and I don't want to speak for another company, but a larger company that might operate in both rural and metropolitan areas would have to, you know, they only have so much budget. They'd have to decide that I'm going to put my dollars into an area that serves way less people than putting my dollars into an area where I could get 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 times the customer. And I think what happens is, ultimately, from a business decision, they end up putting their dollars where more people are, which leaves the rural community, you know, having gaps depending on who serves them. Because we don't have any metropolitan areas and we're all rural, right? We look at our market the same, and our strategy is to get everybody fiber.
That might help level the playing field. I'm going to jump in here with Chad Mix, who's with a broadband provider serving Northwest Wisconsin. We're looking at the issue of expansion from a service level perspective, and we'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about challenges with broadband expansion on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The chair of the Public Service Commission, Rebecca Cameron-Vock, told us on The Morning Show this month that there are innovative solutions in the works to crack this scenario.
We've heard from a number of residents who will call the PSC and they'll say, look, I'm looking at the internet service provider out my front window. They are laying fiber in the roadway, and I've asked them if they can connect my house, but they've told me just to come up the driveway, it's going to take $8,000.
Has this happened to you? What do you want to ask a provider about costs in running fiber optic cable? 800-642-1234. Chad Mix is marketing director for Norvado, based in Cable, and he's with us for about 8 more minutes. Lance is joining us from Clinton. Hi, Lance.
Good morning. Yeah, my question is really related to the PS. What just talked about in the PSC is that I'm literally a quarter mile from fiber at my house, and I'm now on my third satellite internet provider. And every single satellite provider, what I get for an internet speeds isn't worth the money. So I'm canceling again. And what can consumers do to advocate for themselves and for their neighbors? For providers to put fiber and be able to connect homes.
Lance, thank you. Chad.
You know, I think there's a couple things. First, I just want to talk for a second. I think your listeners may like this based on the questions. You know, just because there's fiber a quarter mile from you or out in front of your driveway doesn't mean that it's ready to serve a customer. So we have fiber in our network that's our core network, that's transporting fiber from one or transporting data from one area to another. And just because it comes past you doesn't mean we can just splice it open and run it up your driveway right there. It would have to be planned that we're going to distribute fiber to the homes that are in that area. We'd have to have electronics to be able to splice and provide the signaling to come to your house in that particular area. And then there, as you've heard, there is a cost, a high cost, just to bury the fiber and put it in the ground up to the home. So sometimes we hear this a lot. Well, your fiber's right on the highway and I'm right there. But that is not fiber that's serving individual customers. It's our core network. And it was put in a long time ago, and it was designed as transport. It was not designed to come off to each house at that time. So there is a lot of work and cost that has to be done to deliver to those folks.
So what you're saying is even if you see work being done in front of your house or on your roadway, like, you know, very close to you, it doesn't mean that that is what it actually is in terms of being able to deliver service to your home, even if you wanted to have that fiber optic cable up your driveway.
That is correct. And I think the answer to that and what we're trying to do moving forward is, when we do transport work or we build more core network, is to build it so that we can build to the homes and businesses along the way. But that wasn't always done. And in fact, it rarely was done in the past. So it is a bit of a change. And I just wanted to mention about advocating, especially for rural broadband, the real dilemma is cost. We have the same cost to deliver a square mile of fiber as anyone. However, there may only be three or four homes served in that square mile. And so being able to participate in the grant programs is really what has allowed us to build fiber to our customers and members. Now, we've invested a lot of money as well, and we've made that commitment. But I just don't believe that the economics would work out if we weren't being supported. And it is even hard to make them work out sometimes with the government subsidies. So it is a cost issue. And again, if a square mile of fiber is the same no matter where you're located, obviously, it's a lot less expensive per pass or per home in a highly dense area than it is in a rural area where there's three, four, five, six homes along that same path. And so that's really the challenge, is making it work, making the economics work for it.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Chad Mix, who works for an internet provider in Northwest Wisconsin, as we look at rural broadband and the challenges of connectivity. Along the lines of grants, we heard from Gary in Iron River email to ask, how did Norvado find the money to convert to fiber, and so many other providers in Wisconsin have not?
Well, we started early. Certainly give the company credit. We started building fiber to the home in 2009, and that was brought on by the Reinvestment Act, or the stimulus grant, people call it, from the federal government in 2008. So we aggressively applied, were awarded grants, and then also invested our own money to start building fiber to the premise back in 2009. A lot of providers were still doing DSL in 2000. I mean, we were, everybody was, but when they received grant money, they were still implementing DSL. We made the choice to implement fiber knowing that it was going to go there and that the demand for internet speed and capacity was going to continue to grow. Unfortunately, it's put us in a good position now because a lot of our market has fiber to the premise, and they're able to basically get any speed up to a gigabit of internet that they want in the middle of the Northwoods. So it's really been an aggressive strategy to work with the government as well as invest our own money, to build out the network.
In our last moments here, Governor Evers designated this year as the year of broadband, created a task force last year. We've been checking in on their work periodically. What is your What is your insight to lawmakers here? What would you tell them about how to provide high-speed internet more successfully in Wisconsin?
You know, I think that they should put an emphasis on fiber-delivered internet so that we don't run into these same problems again. You know, I think when we put the grants out, and nothing wrong with other means of delivering internet, but it's certainly not as robust and reliable as building that fiber network right to someone's home. It's really the best thing that you can provide. And I really think they should put an emphasis on helping the phone companies extend their fiber networks right to the home, even though it may cost a little bit more upfront than, say, putting in a point-to-point wireless solution or a satellite solution. I really think that the payback will be much greater and it will last far longer.
Chad,
without
thank
having
you.
To reinvest.
Yeah, Chad, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Chad Mix is Marketing Director of Norvado, which operates in northern Wisconsin. News update is next on the Ideas Network. And now we're learning about a new app called Legal Tune-Up Wisconsin. It enables people to discover what legal problems are on their record that they have the power to fix without an attorney involved. And the app uses publicly available data to help Wisconsinites identify legal issues and take steps to clear those eligible criminal records and other issues from the state's court system. Have you been arrested, but the charges were dismissed? Is the incident still showing up in court records? Do you think an erroneous court record has held you back from getting a job or getting a home? Join in 800-642-1234. Attorney Marsha Mansfield is director of the social justice organization called Lift Dane, which recently released the app. Marsha, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, before we get into how the app works, give us a sense of the problem that this app is trying to solve.
Sure. One in three Americans have a criminal record. And while we don't have specific data in Wisconsin, there's no reason not to believe that that's true in our state as well. A second important fact is that background checks are required for most jobs, and especially for jobs that provide the most stability, pay, and benefits. And criminal background checks typically are done when people are looked at for jobs or housing. And employers and landlords look at two major databases in Wisconsin. The first is the Circuit Court online system that we all know as CCAP. And the second is the Department of Justice database called WORCS, or the Wisconsin Online Record Check System. And the records that landlords and employers can find on there include arrests, they include charges for that were dismissed, and other items that might allow somebody to think that that person isn't worthy of being hired, and therefore it impacts employment, it impacts wages, it impacts housing, it impacts education, and it impacts racial equity. So those are all reasons that underlie the basis for developing this tool.
And the records on file with the state court system, they often include arrests that did not lead to charges or convictions. And these records, they may go back indefinitely. Why does your record remain online in the system if you're not found guilty?
All court proceedings, with the exception of those that are required by law to be sealed, such as juvenile court and guardianships of elderly people, all court records are public in Wisconsin. And the policy has been to enter any court proceedings in that repository. So it's a case management system by the courts that's open to the public. And that is why all the records are contained in the case management system.
You know, you mentioned employment and housing, and many states do have laws that prohibit arrest records that did not result in conviction from being considered in employment or other types of decisions. What is the status here in Wisconsin on that?
That's the same in Wisconsin. Okay. You cannot discriminate against people because of their criminal record or arrests, except in very specific circumstances. You can prohibit hiring in certain areas. But the fact of the matter is, we all are influenced by what we see. And you look at a record and you see an arrest or two, and you look at another record and there are no arrests on it, who are you more likely to hire? The person with a couple of arrests on their record or the person with nothing on their record? It's a gut feeling, even if people are not consciously aware that they are making those kinds of choices.
Well, let's move on now to the Legal Tune-Up app. Can you tell us about it and what it is doing?
Absolutely. It is a really easy tool for people to use. You can go to legaltuneup.org and put in a very small amount of information. And then the tool itself will scan public records. It will scan the records, the court system records on CCAP, and also the criminal history repository records that's known as WARCs, and identify cases in situations where someone may have had an arrest but not a charge, or someone had a charge that was dismissed. And they'll identify it and show it to the person and say, would you like help in getting rid of this record? And if a person says yes, it's guided, the person is guided through the process, and it only takes 5 or 10 minutes, where a little bit more information, such as your name and address, are inputted online. The system pulls up your record and asks you to identify or verify whether this is you. And if it is you, it will auto-populate a form that then can be sent to the Department of Justice or the clerk of court's office to clear that record. So if it's a record that's on CCAP, it's automatically filled out. You can sign it on your phone or on the computer, and the Lifdane tool will automatically send it to the clerk of courts. The Department of Justice records are a little bit more challenging because they require somebody to put their fingerprints on the form, because the DOJ uses fingerprints to match up people with records. So we have in Dane County made arrangements with both the Urban League and Legal Action of Wisconsin, where someone could say, I'd like to get my fingerprinting done at the Urban League. The form is automatically emailed to the Urban League, and the person can make an appointment, go in, get their fingerprinting done, and then the form is mailed in for them.
It sounds what this is like, Marcia, is you're making a very bureaucratic system that is hard for someone without a legal degree to navigate, making it more seamless to get through.
That's exactly right. We've made it efficient and effective. If anyone has ever tried to look at records from the Department of Justice database, they are structured in a certain form that is not intuitive and easy to understand. And what our tool has done is it sorts through that information on the form, makes it really easy for people to look at it and understand it and make a decision what they want to do about that particular event.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Marcia Mansfield, who is an attorney, director of the social justice organization called Lifdane, which recently released this app called Legal Tune-Up. We're talking about that helps people clean up court records. You can join in. Have you tried to clean up old or incorrect court records under your name but aren't sure where to start? 800-642-1234. Marcia, do you have any sense of to what degree, how inaccurate or how outdated are these arrest and conviction records are in the court record system?
You know, neither the circuit court system or the Department of Justice keep statistics. So it's difficult to estimate how many records like this can be removed. But I will say that a couple of years ago, the Urban League, Legal Action of Wisconsin, working with volunteer attorneys from Foley and Lardner, started having expungement clinics where people from our community were invited to go and get help getting their records cleared. The very first clinic had over 200 people attending it.
Wow.
And there have been, we've been in the past year trying to schedule them virtually on a monthly basis, and they are attended, attendance is full at every single clinic that's held.
Explain expungement and the distinction here of cleaning up records and what expungement does.
Sure. I want to make clear that there's a distinction between expungement and clearing records. Expungement is a very specific tool to use to get records taken off of your criminal history when there already has been a conviction. And in Wisconsin, the expungement laws are very restrictive and generally only apply to younger individuals who had convictions, who have successfully completed all of the requirements of that conviction, whether it was incarceration or probation or restitution. And at the time of the conviction, the judge told that person that he, she, or they were eligible for expungement. So it's a really seldom used process. Record clearing is different. Record clearing clears arrests and charges that were dismissed, as well as if you went through a criminal case and you were acquitted, that case is also eligible to be dismissed from your criminal record, both on CCAP and on WORCS, on the Wisconsin Online Record Check System. So there's two different systems. And the challenge for all of us, because it's a really difficult process, is to make it as easy as possible. So we have been able to automate the record clearing system for people who have arrests and charges that have been dismissed. The expungement is a much more involved process, and you really do need a lawyer to help you with it, as well as cases where somebody may have been charged or convicted, and it shows up on their criminal history record, but it's not them. It's a case of mistaken identity. So my name is Marcia Mansfield, and maybe some other Marcia Mansfield's crime shows up on my criminal history. And that's also a more complicated process to get it cleared.
Marcia Mansfield is director of LIFT Dane, which stands for Legal Interventions for Transforming Dane County. Have you tried to clean up old or incorrect court records? How did that go? What questions do you have about how long something stays on your record and why? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Marcia Mansfield here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Attorney Marcia Mansfield leads the nonprofit LIFT Dane, and she pushes for governments to proactively and automatically clean up arrest records to remove arrests that do not lead to charges or convictions. A new app we're talking about called Legal Tune Up Wisconsin helps to do that. And Marcia is with us for 10 more minutes. Brad is joining us in Racine. Hi, Brad. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. How is it handled if you use the TuneUp app, or even if you get a record expunged? I guess it would matter. Either case, when the newspapers maybe have a police beat or police reporting and it shows up online, your arrest shows up online, but your case was dismissed or whatever.
That's a really good question, Brad. And there actually is a movement right now in the media world to tell and encourage media organizations to clean up their records as well and get rid of those references to people because of the problem that you accurately identify. And that is, social media is a really challenging area because we don't have the ability to clean it up ourselves. And things like arrests can show up on social media. But there is a really directed movement towards media right now to engage in record cleanup themselves.
Brad, thank you for that call. A little pushback here, Marcia. What about those who would say, look, you're erasing a public record that's owned by the state of Wisconsin and its residents and taxpayers. Why is that okay to change it?
We're not changing records. We're removing records that really should never have been there in the first place. In Wisconsin, as well as in the rest of the country, there's a presumption of innocence until proven guilty. And when you are arrested and not charged, that arrest should not be burdening you in the same way as a conviction for a crime that somebody committed. Furthermore, arrest records are often inaccurate or misleading. So when a police officer arrests somebody and writes something down and it becomes part of the criminal history repository, it doesn't mean that that person committed the crime. And it's also well documented that disparate policing practices are impacting people of color, which with a much higher frequency than the white population. So it's even affecting the people of color even more than the remainder of the population. So that's the reason why these records should be removed. They shouldn't be there in the first place, and they have a negative impact on employment, housing, education, and other areas of people's lives.
Do you have a sense as to how proactive Wisconsin government is on this issue in cleaning up and maintaining these records, arrest records?
There are only a few states in the country that have been proactive in cleaning up these records. And there is a movement called Clean Slate, where states are adopting legislation that allow people to clean up their records easily or even do it administratively. So individuals don't have to take the very complicated and sometimes lengthy process to clear their own records. For example, in Pennsylvania and most recently in Utah, Clean Slate legislation has passed and steps are being done on a governmental level to clear people's records. Clean Slate legislation has not been introduced in Wisconsin, and I really don't know if it will be introduced in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, as I mentioned before, has a very unusual expungement law, and it would be really great if our legislatures would work on changing that first.
Let's go to Tom now in Rhinelander. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Marcia. Currently, I'm going through a divorce, and my wife's attorney thought that it would be a good idea to put a temporary restraining order on me, a verbal temporary restraining order. It never went to court. It was stayed in an open status for a couple of months. It was supposed to expire a couple of weeks ago, yet it's still on the circuit court record. What do I do with that to get that removed?
Well, I can't give you legal advice, Tom, but I would contact an attorney about getting it removed if it is something that you think shouldn't be there in the first place.
Oh, I understand. But in general terms, if it had an expiration date, should it just automatically come off? Is it just the court system being sloppy, or is that something that I need to take action to do to get it physically, or, you know, to get it removed or expunged?
I don't know, because typically if it is a verbal agreement and nothing is in writing, then I'm not sure what's on the court record, because court records usually involve orders and agreements that are in writing. So if there is something in the record that was not in writing in the first place, I would contact the court system about clearing it.
Tom, thanks for the call. We're talking with Marcia Mansfield, an attorney, director of the social justice organization Lift Dane. It has this app called Legal Tune-Up that helps people clean up court records. Jane is joining us from Green Bay. Jane, hi. What is the situation you're faced with?
Hi, good morning. Our son, when he was about 18, got into a little situation, and he needed to go through some community service and things. And the judge said once he did that, everything was going to be expunged off of his record. And I do believe that that did take place. However, he is a truck driver now, and sometimes he delivers into military bases. And there is a, they do background checks, and there is a background check that they do that you can have like federally to receive what they call a transportation worker's card. Mm-hmm. So that it already shows that you've been, that you have had this background checked, and he's gotten that. But sometimes when he goes into certain bases, they end up giving him problems because something is showing up on his record yet. And like I said, it was expunged, and we can't see anything when we look up, when we look up his record. But when the Department of Defense is looking him up and running his name and license,
they see
something is coming up.
Something's coming up. Marcia. So,
right. And there are a variety of different databases, both in the state and in the country, that have information in it that different entities can access. And some of those databases talk to each other and some of them don't. And I don't know what database has this information that's causing your son these problems. But again, I would encourage you to seek out the help of an attorney who may be able to make a request to try to figure out which database these records are showing up in.
Jane, thank you. In our final moments together, what is next for Lyft Dane and this app? What are the next steps in this project?
We are doing a couple of things, Kate. First of all, we're working on making additional tools available to people, in particular to help people to be able to address driver's license suspensions, which also are a huge barrier to employment. And secondly, to help people with child support matters to adjust a child support order so that the payer can afford to pay it and the person who gets the child support can receive it. So those are the two technology developments that we are working on with our tool. We also are starting to plan for expanding from Dane County to around the state. So not only is the tool itself available, but people have places to go outside of Dane County to get fingerprinted, and people have places to go outside of Dane County to get employment and training services, which are an important part of the
component. Marcia, thank you for joining us. Marcia Mansfield, Director of Lyft Dane, here on the Ideas Network.